Today's Mishnah in Masechet Idiot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is Perek Beit Mishnah Dalet. So after our learning the four things that Rabbi Hanina Sgan HaKohanim taught us, we have three things that Rabbi Yishmael was presented with and refused to give a clear-cut yes or no. Now, the reason he refused to give a clear-cut yes or no is because there wasn't a clear-cut yes or no, since it's very dependent on the particular circumstances. So there were Shlosha Dvarim, Amar Rabbi Yishmael Lefnei Chachomim, Bekerem B'Yavne. Oh, sorry, I jumped ahead. I'm on the next Mishnah. Next. So, okay. These are not things that he didn't say yes or no. That's the next Mishnah. So there were three things that Rabbi Yishmael actually did give Ipsak in Kerem B'Yavne. And of course, how could we mention Kerem B'Yavne without mentioning Barnea? So this was all in Barnea's neighborhood, and here are the three things that he mentioned. He said, number one, Beitza Trufa, which is Netuna Agabe Yerek Shel Truma. So if you've got an egg that has been beaten, and now it's very capable of sticking to things. If you've got a raw egg, and you let that raw egg fall on some lettuce, it just falls off of the lettuce, right? But once you've beaten it up, now if you put it on top of things which are truma, then it's considered to be a chibur. And it's all considered to be one thing. It's lettuce with a topping. And lettuce with a topping means that if a tvul yom, and remember we talked yesterday that a tvul yom has a din of a sheni bituma, and therefore he's going to be metame a truma. So if the tvul yom even comes in contact with the egg, but he doesn't come in contact with the veggie that is truma, it's as if he touched the veggie, and that veggie that was truma becomes a shlishi, and therefore it is usur. But if the egg wasn't taruf, it wasn't beaten together, then it's not considered to be a chibur, because it doesn't stick properly. Now suppose you actually had fried the egg, and now you can take it and you can put it on the food, but it's like giving kova. Now there's not exactly touching one the other in a way that makes them stick. It's just like having space between them. Then it's not considered to be a chibur. And if a tvul yom touches the egg, what's the problem? An egg isn't truma. Therefore, it won't be bakabel tuma. And the veggie that it's over is not going to become tame at all. Okay, so that's halacha number one. Here's Rabbi Shmuel's halacha number two. So remember, in order to define what the nature is of the Isser of Shikha, so the Torah says, lo tashuv likachta, not allowed to go back to collect something that you've passed by in your field, and that has to be left for the ani. So the question is, nogea over here, what is considered to be a lo tashuv likachta? So what he said is that if you left a shibolet shebekatzir, you actually went through a particular row, and you left one shibolet, and it was still in the ground. But it's so long that the top of it actually can bend over and touch the next row that you haven't gotten to yet. So then when you get to that next row, if you would be able to niktzra imakama, so if it would be able to be held at the same time that you were doing your processing with the grain that you're up to, so then that would mean that it wasn't shachua, because you don't have to go back. And the Torah says don't go back, but here I don't have to go back. I just pull it together with the grain that I'm pulling now in the new row, and therefore it belongs still to the Baal HaBayit. It's not considered to be given to the aniyim, because I don't have to go back for it. But if it's not that long that allows me to grab it and take it out of the ground, then it belongs to the aniyim, because in order for me to properly collect it, I'd have to turn around and take it from a place where I had already processed the harvest. That's my second My third din is nogea also in yonim of zroyim. This one is nogea kiloi hakeret. Now, in order to understand what this halacha is, you have to know the din of an oris. So an oris is a strange type of keren. Normally, remember, the halacha is that if you have a single vine in the ground, how far away do you have to stay from a single vine in the ground to plant a tomato, let's say, right? So the din is not very far. 6 tfachim from a single vine would be sufficient for you to distance it, and it's not going to be considered kilayim. The problem is, however, that if you have a vineyard, now a vineyard has got 5 vines, remember, shnayim, keneged shnayim, echad yotzei zonav, this was a halacha that we've spoken about many times when we were doing zroyim, then you're not allowed to get anywhere near your Karen, and you've got to keep a distance of not shisha tvachim, you've got to keep the distance of arba amais. And therefore, that makes a big difference to define what is considered to be a Karen and what is considered to be just a single vine. Now, add to that mix the din of an oris. An oris is not a standard Karen. An oris is a trellis Karen. So you've got these vines that they're growing up over a trellis or over a wall. And there the halacha is that you don't need the shnayim keneged shnayim, the echad yotzei zonav. As long as you've got 5 vines that are growing over the trellis, no matter where they are, even if they're like on different sides and so on, or let's say you've got a space that's surrounded by a wall and they're growing up on that wall, and there's 5 of them growing up of that wall, so then it is the equivalent of a vineyard. And you'd have to be marchik 4 amas even from anywhere that's on that the trellis. Okay, so now the question is, what if you've got a little garden, you build a wall around that garden, and now it's a kind of wall where you've got these vines growing up and they're growing over the wall. It's a very pretty little garden. The problem is, if you've got 5 of these vines that are growing over the wall in the garden, so then the entire thing should be considered a vineyard. But then you can't plant anything in your garden. So therefore, came along Rabbi Shmuel to give us the shear. So if you have a gina kitana, which has an oris, and it's surrounded by this oris, which means that there are 5 vines. So, im yesh ba kim lo botzer v'salomikan, lo botzer v'salomikan. Remember that the shear of arba amas is to allow a person who's working to harvest grapes, who has a little basket attached to him, which means that he takes up, in terms of personal space, around the vine, 2 amas. So, if you've got a guy that could be working on one vine and a guy that could be working on another vine, and they could be standing next to each other in the middle of the garden. What does that mean? It means that you've got 4 amas, because that's the shear of Moloa Botzer Vesalo, is 2 amas. So if you've got 2 amas extending from each vine, so then you've got 4, I should say from each side, because this is an oris, not literally a vine. So if you could have a guy standing in the middle of the garden and another guy standing in the middle of the garden facing the other directions, and there's still enough room, then that means that you are not covering the entire garden with the oris. And therefore, you can plant things in that garden because they're so far apart. They're not called an oris. They have to be within 4 amas of each other. And because of that, you can now plant things in that garden as long as, of course, you keep the 6 tfachim, which is the distance you need to keep even from a single vine, which is not an oris. So even though it doesn't have a din of oris, of course, you still have to keep your distance from each one of those vines. But it doesn't usher the entire space because it's not an oris. But if not, if you don't have that kind of distance, then that means the entire space, no matter how far it is from a particular vine, the entire space of your once beautiful garden is usher to be planted, because it is all the equivalent of a vineyard, the type of vineyard which is called an ores, and therefore in lav, lo tizarea at all. That was the third halacha. Mishnah Hey, in Perek Beit of Idiyot. Now we were talking, our previous Mishnah, about three halachas of Rabbi Shmuel. This halacha, in this Mishnah, we're talking about three halachas that Rabbi Shmuel did not give a definitive psak on because there was no definitive psak. Velo amar behem lo yisur velo heter, because it was very dependent on the context. However, Rabbi Yoshua ben Matya, he was mefarish the different ways that the context would make the halacha change. And because of that, we were able to utilize Rabbi Shmuel Shita. Rabbi Yoshua ben Matya was a Talmud of Rabbi Shmuel. So here are the three cases. First of all, what's the din of a mefis mursa b'shabbat? So you've got an infected boil, and you want to lance that boil on Shabbos. What's the din? So if it was lasot la peh chayav, if what you want to do is you want to make an actual opening that will allow for drainage of the pus and would also make certain to keep open the area to allow air to come in and to therefore make it a less suitable place for infections. You want it to air out and also let the pus out. So that means that it is considered to be a normal opening. An opening always works in two directions. And so a two-direction opening is usur on Shabbos. And if you would do it, you would actually be chayav achatas, because it's a real tolda of baina. But suppose the only thing that you wanted to do was to let the pus out, and you had no intention of creating a permanent opening that would stay open until it heals. So im lahotzi mimena lecha, you're just going to squeeze pus out of it, and you don't really have an intention to leave it open. So if it's only lahotzi mimena lecha, then it's putter, and the reason it would be putter is because it's even what it is that you're doing is a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. It's not considered to be that you need the opening. You don't need the opening. You only want to get rid of the pus. That's a classic case of malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. So if you would have actually opened it up when you lanced it in a way that it would have stayed open, it still wouldn't have been usur. So we don't even have to be choshed that maybe accidentally you'll end up making a real opening. By the way, you'll notice this is something that we're very used to, because on Shabbos, we will often make one-way openings. Let's say you need to open a can, right? So if you open a small hole in which you can only get things to go out of by squeezing the can, so you want to get rid of the oil of your tuna or whatever. Once you've made a small hole, then basically, if it's not going to be going in and out, so there's not a problem of the malacha of making a hole. So therefore, here it's actually mutter even lechatchila, because of the fact that you are in pain. And to allow you to cure your boil, we allow you to do it even lechatchila, even though normally the rabbanan asr the malacha shein tzricha legufa. In this case, it's clearly a malacha shein tzricha legufa, and it was, even if it were accidentally turned into a real hole, it wouldn't have made any difference. The next question is al hatzad nachash b'shabbat. So he wouldn't say anything, Rabbi Shmuel, because it really depended, and he didn't want to start getting involved in the details, because then he has to make absolutely certain that people are clear. So Rabbi Yoshua ben Matya, his Talmud, explained, it depends. There's a snake that you're worried is going to be maybe biting you. You don't want him in your campsite. So in that case, if all you want to do is trap the snake, that's also a malacha she'netzricha l'gufa, because the meaning of trapping is where you need what you're trapping. That's the malacha. If you have no interest at all in what you're trapping, so then you're doing the act of the malacha, but it's not what a malacha is, because you have no interest in what the malacha is for, which is to get a snake. Well, you don't want a snake. You want to get rid of a snake. So if you would do it for that purpose, it would be putter, and therefore it would even be mutter, because you're doing it to protect yourself. But im l'refu'ah, let's say you want this snake because you need to collect snake poison. There was just an article about a guy that let himself got bitten by 200 snakes, I think it was, so that they could manufacture antitoxin from his blood. But anyway, it is a very useful thing to get the different types of venom from snakes. So if you're into research on snakes and you need it for a refuah, so then you need the snake. And then, of course, it would be usher. Another third issue that was raised for Rabbi Shmuel was the question of what happens if you make a lefasin ironiot. What are lefasin ironiot? So lefasin usually are these big soup pots. Now, the way that they would make it in a cheapo fashion that people just, you know, simple people would make, ironiot to the people that live in these, in out there in the middle of nowhere. So what they do is they take clay and they make it into a ball, leaving the middle of the ball not fully filled, so that as the air expands, it actually creates an area inside of this ball that is going to be empty. They heat that up as it expands, and now it becomes a ball with a hollow middle. Then they cut through it, and voila, you now have two soup pots made out of cheres, right? So now the question is, before you cut through the ball, is what you have considered to be a kli? What is the din of that thing? So he explained, Rabbi Yeshua ben Matya, that the din actually depends on what type of tumor we're talking about. If they're inside of an ohel ha'amid, then they're not mekabel tumah. But if they're being carried around, even while you haven't separated them yet, they're being carried around by someone who is metame b'masa, so they're carried around by a zav. So then they can be mekabel tumah. What's the issue over here? If they're inside of an ohel ha'amid, so that's the equivalent of a Samit Pasil. If the whole thing has never been opened, then it's perfectly sealed. And since it's only Mekabel Tumah from its inside has not been exposed to Tumah in the Ohel. Therefore, it's not going to be Metame. But remember, anything which can be carried is considered to be completely immersed in Tumah, and it's as if the Zav touched the inside of the Kli. It makes no difference whether it's accessible to the air or not. So, therefore, I say, when it comes to Tumah Ziva, it would be Mekabel Tumah if the Zav would carry it. That has nothing to do with Tzamit Pasil. Tzamit Pasil is a din only in the circumstances of Ohel HaMeit. Rebbe Elazar Reb Tzadik says, absolutely ridiculous. The issue here is not whether it's Bitzamit Pasel. The issue is it a Kli? And therefore, if it hasn't been finished yet, and you never cut it into two, how do you call that a Kli? Af b'masa hazav ta'orot, even if they're carried around by a Zav, they're basically gome kalim. You don't consider them to be finished until you've turned them into soup pots. I mean, we don't call this a soup pot with a cover. That would be like itzamit pasil. It's an unfinished soup pot. Therefore, it would not be mekabel tumah whatsoever. a fine introduction to the next piece of idios.